Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Welcome to OneSpatial's interim results for the period to the 31st of July 2020. I'm joined today by Andy Fabian. Andy is our interim CFO and he joined us in June. So before kicking off with the half year numbers, I want to just take a few minutes to just reflect on who we are and what we do at OneSpatial. So OneSpatial is all around unlocking the value of location data for our customers. So that could be from an economic perspective, so helping them increase sales or reduce costs, or it could be from a social perspective. So more and more, we're seeing the needs of the customers being around things such as health and safety. So we target key sectors such as government, utilities and transport, where location plays an important role. And we're in a number of territories with an offshore in Tunisia. We're transitioning from a legacy GIS offering in our French and Belgian business to our SaaS-based location master data management. This started last year when we did a deal with Esri, the big player in the GIS market, coupled with an acquisition of a company in France called Geomap Images, who are an Esri-based solutions provider. And the goal of doing all this is to get everyone, all the organisations, all the parts of OneSpatial onto this one platform of providing OneSpatial's location master data management software and solutions. So what does LMDM mean? What do we actually do? So there's two key parts for this. Data management solutions, which are powered by our One Integrate Rules Engine and our business apps. So on the data management side, it's really core to ensure that your data that you're putting into your database, or it could be your GIS system, that that is accurate and complete. And we have some really great tools, including One Integrate and our new One Data Gateway to do this. Once you've got your data into your database, you then want to use the data. You want to help the customer make some business decisions using that data. And that's where we're looking at developing some business applications. And we'll talk a bit more about this in a later section. Our software is deployed on-premise, on mobile, and in the cloud. And I've set out a couple of really good case studies that we have where you can see where we've really helped the customer unlock the value from their location data. Interesting, the US Census was our first customer in the US, and we now have over 30 customers. It's really exciting that we're in a growing market. The geospatial software market is growing over 12% per year, and now over 80% of data has a location element to it. So that really works for OneSpatial's strengths. Our data management tools work at their best when there's high volumes of complicated data. And the growth drivers are regulations, smart cities, and there's just so much more location data being created. And we need to help our customers unlock the value of that because they're spending a lot of money on that at the moment, whether they're getting it from a third party or they're going and capturing that data themselves. From a revenue perspective, we're really concentrating on building that recurring revenue, but we've also got a really good geographic spread across our businesses. But for me, the growth is really around the US market where there's a huge amount of potential for OneSpatial. We've got a good spread of customers across various sectors. And for me, there's no customer dominance across our customers. So that's really good from a risk perspective for us. And we have a number of powerful partners. I mentioned Esri earlier. They are dominant in our market with over 40% market share. But we're increasingly working with a number of other partners. And that's really key to our growth strategy. And I'm going to be talking about that a little bit later on. So I'm now going to take a look at the H1 numbers to July 2020 at a high level, and then I'll pass over to Andy Fabian, who will look at these in a bit more detail. So our revenues have gone up by 8% to 11.7 million. That includes the acquisition from last year of Geomap Images. Our solutions revenue for our LMDM, this excludes the old GIS revenues in France and Belgium. That's gone up by 21% to 10.1 million. And our adjusted EBITDA is at 1.7 million. Our operating cash is an inflow this year of 1.7 million compared to an outflow last year of 1.9 million. So what are the three key things about these set of numbers for me? Firstly, it's about a really robust trading performance against a COVID-19 backdrop. We have had some challenges, particularly in our French market, and I'll talk about those later. But for me, these are still a really good set of results and demonstrated by a positive free cash flow, which is a significant swing compared to the last year. And excitingly, we are entering H2 with an increased order book. It is very significantly increased since the January position, and our pipeline is really growing. So we have seen some deals push out. They are taking longer to close, but very few of them are actually going away. So that pipeline is really growing nicely. So a couple of key points about the year, and I'll cover some of these in a bit more detail later on, but we won a 2.6 million five-year contract with the US state of Michigan. This was a really great contract for us. We had some further wins across all geographic markets, including the Environment Agency and the same ground LACs. And these deals were actually won during the COVID period. We've had some expansion contracts of our existing customers, including Google, Northern Gas Networks, and the Greater London Authority, where they're working on that exciting project for the Geospatial Commission for the Underground Asset Register. And we've also made a start some of the ESRI migrations from the legacy GIS to the new world of LMDM solutions revenue. And we also released One Data Gateway, which is our first cloud-based offering. This was really essential for the Michigan contract, and you'll see this is part of a number of the new wins that I'll be talking about later. And this is a really exciting part of our new technology. So before handing over to Andy, I just wanted to touch on COVID-19, the impacts, the actions, and what's happening regarding this and our current trading. So there has been minimal impact on our existing customer engagements. I think there's no substitute for being on client site. But I think in reality, we did pretty well at actually getting through those custom engagements. Our sales cycles have lengthened across all territories, and we will see that continuing. But in the French business, we did have an impact on the business. Because of COVID, the local elections were delayed, and that did have a knock-on impact to winning new business. So there was a period of 4 months where no tenders were issued and no tenders were looked at by the local authority. But those, thankfully, are now up and running again. In terms of actions, we have some really good business continuity plans. So we're all out working remotely with our clients almost straight away. A lot of our products are technology enabled. So this also helped us working with them. And our software tools and all of our things like our CRM and our emails are all in the cloud. So this really helped that. We didn't take any furlough support in the UK, but we did take around 300,000 in the US and France. We took some extra funding from some lenders in France. Really, we just took this as it was sort of readily available, relatively cheap, and it just gives us that extra buffer and support for our balance sheet. And we kept a tight control over the costs. So from a current perspective, we've got really good growing recurring revenue, which gives us a good foundation and gives us good stability, particularly in times of COVID. We've got an increased order book, and trading in H2 has begun in line with management's expectations. And we've had an exciting new win in September with a new client, the US Geological Survey. We've laid out in our half-year statement that we expect our H2 revenues to be at least similar level to H1. Indeed, a few weeks ago, we may have been at slightly different, but just given the recent COVID coming back, we decided that was the right approach. And, you know, we believe that we should be in a good position to achieve that. And so whilst sales cycles continue to be protracted, we really are confident in the resilience of OneSpatial. So now I'm going to hand it over to Andy, who's going to take us through the numbers in a bit more detail.
Thank you very much, Claire. Before taking you through the details of the results, I just wanted to say I'm really pleased to be here at OneSpatial because I think it's a really exciting time for the company. They've been through a three-year turnaround and now the business is on a very solid footing. It's a great management team led by Claire, and the company has positioned itself really well for growth in terms of establishing a focus on a SaaS business model, building up the innovation in repeatable apps, and also the move to cloud technology and more investment there, which will lead to greater scalability. So for me, it's like finding a hidden gem. And I hope that, you know, some of my experience from StatPro will be beneficial for helping the business accelerate growth and create value. So to the results, there's quite a few moving parts here in terms of the revenue, but revenue is up 8% overall. And I think, you know, what I would say is it's a pretty robust performance during the COVID crisis. That revenue increase was obviously benefited, as Claire mentioned, by the fact that we had additional revenue compared to last year from the acquisition, an extra 3 months. The gross margin is slightly down, and I think that's partly because of the setback in terms of, you know, particularly in Europe, we had a less utilization on our client services team. But what we did do is we decided we were going to keep all the team. We didn't do any furloughing. We did take some overseas government grants, which helped us. But the key for us was we wanted to manage the business tightly and weather the storm of COVID, but, you know, put us in good shape going forward. So we maintained tight cost control. The admin expenses were flat on a like-for-like basis. The increase was really the additional 3 months from the acquisition. So overall, it was a sort of robust performance, EBITDA flat year on year. And overall, we did report a loss, but that's partly because our results are impacted by a number of non-cash charges, such as amortization of acquired intangibles. I guess for me, the key thing, as has been mentioned and will probably mention a few times, is most importantly, we're free cash flow positive. In terms of what we're trying to do, we're trying to transition to a stronger recurring SaaS solutions base. So the GIS revenue there you see on the slide is effectively the piece that we're moving away from as we focus on business applications, repeatable business solutions, and not competing against Esri, but working with them as a partner. So I guess for me, the key thing is we had a 21% increase in the solutions revenue, which obviously was supported by the acquisition. But, you know, that's where we're trying to grow the business going forward, which will give us a stronger repeatability. I think in the past, OneSpatial did a lot of customization on its software for large clients and whatever. What we're trying to do is make sure, rather than doing that, we work with clients but build things in a way that it can be configured for other clients. And on the GIS, that is effectively going to transition. We've got 7 projects underway migrating from the LX platform to the Esri platform. That overall will take a number of years to do, but that's an important process that's begun. And I guess, you know, the thing for me is the reported rate of revenue growth slightly understates the potential, because we've got a very good increase in our order book of committed revenue. So we're confident that we can deliver H2 revenues at a similar level to H1 and hopefully a little bit more. We're focusing on increasing recurring revenues, and we already have pretty high renewal rates with our clients, but a lot of contracts on a sort of rolling 1 year basis. And what we're trying to do is move to longer term contracts. You know, the contract that we'll mention a few times, probably with Michigan, that has a 5 year term in terms of the licenses. And that's what we're trying to do. We also increased in France one of our largest support contracts for an additional 4 year commitment. That's the key for me, is building up the longevity of clients. We have a good loyal client base. So the recurring revenue was up 15%, and the percentage of recurring revenue was 44%. And in time, we want to increase that more. It'll take a while to get maybe to 50%. The plan is to get that up, and there's no real upper limit. But what I would say is, sort of in the short term, maybe at the year end, it might be back to 42% potentially, because our services is also growing. And at the moment, we do still need to sell services to implement and train and so forth. But as we move forward and with our cloud offering and so forth, you know, we do expect that the service revenue will be a smaller percentage of group revenue. And the other thing is, of course, we are still selling, particularly in Europe, some perpetual licenses, the old business model, but in time that will transition. And going forward, I guess we're planning to develop and report new KPIs on recurring revenue to help show the transition and progress on that. Briefly, the sort of regional split in terms of how we're organized, we're focusing on 4 broad regions that you can see there. Europe grew, but that's mainly because of the additional months of the acquisition, and actually on an underlying basis was down a bit for all the reasons that Claire's explained. I guess, you know, the exciting area for us is the US, which grew at 12%. And although it's only 10% of our revenue at the moment, we see that as the largest potential for growth in the longer term. So on the balance sheet, I suppose this is a typical balance sheet for a software company. We have a lot of intangibles, about 3.8 million of acquired intangibles. And obviously that has an impact in terms of the amortization of that comes through our P&L. But it's obviously non-cash. In terms of development costs, 5.8 million, you know, we are currently writing off pretty much the amount that we're capitalizing. So we're not sort of expecting that to grow particularly, but it will, you know, maybe go up and down over time, depending on our development plans. I guess a key thing for me is managing the working capital, and we reduced the trade receivables from 4.6 to 3.4 million. With tighter focus on cash, and the deferred income increased compared to this time last year. Now, again, it's a small proportion of our total revenue, but that may be a balance that will increase in time as we get these more longer-term contracts and more subscription licenses. We took on some new bank borrowings to shore up the balance sheet, so we have a good net cash position of 3.4 million, gross cash of 6.6 million. And finally, from me, cash is always king. And during the turnaround, I guess the company has been consuming cash, and very pleased to report that we've had an inflow this year compared to an outflow last year. Last year, I guess there was quite a big working capital outflow in the period. And this year we've had a small inflow, so that's helped. We are spending on R&D, and we expect to spend a similar level for the rest of the year. We did have a 0.6 million deferred consideration on the acquisition, which was done last year. And so with that and the new borrowings, we ended up with gross cash of 6.6 million. And I guess for me, it's important to have a good cash position. The fact that we're now generating operating cash means we have choices as to whether we increase our development spend, which we're not currently planning to do, or we increase distribution costs, and we have grown a little bit in the US in terms of more salespeople, or whether we just increase profits. So we're in a very good cash position. And with that, I will hand back to Claire.
Thanks very much, Andy. I'm now going to take you through the growth strategy for OneSpatial. So how am I going to scale this business to get the growth and the cash that we really want? So there's three pillars to our growth strategy: innovation, customer relationships, and smart partnerships. So in terms of innovation, this is really key. You know, in terms of wanting to improve that recurring revenue, the gross margin, it's all about repeatable solutions. Back into what we talked about earlier in terms of what comprises the location master data management and solutions, well, it's two key things. First of all, it's the data management solutions with One Integrate and One Data Gateway. We've been enhancing One Integrate in the year with new features. And obviously, we've brought One Data Gateway to market this year. On the business applications, we're creating some database agnostic applications in the UK, and we'll talk about these a little bit more in a moment. But we've also got the French business applications that we acquired along with GeoMap Images. And then it's really important that we develop our multi-tenancy cloud platform. This is a real need in the current market, and it's key to our successful growth strategy. In terms of customer relationships, we have a customer strategy around land and expand, getting with our clients with a small proof of concept, then take that into a more major solution, but then also cross-sell other parts of our technology and solutions. It's around close relationships. We're seen as trusted partners by our customers. And a real change that's really happened over the last 6 months is doing much more customer-guided innovation, using my chief product officer to really identify, right, this is a really good need and business need of the customer, then checking the market to make sure there's a market need. And once we've done all that research, it's then ensuring that that goes back into innovation and it's developed by the company. So we really want to focus on repeatable, customer-led, innovative solutions. And then it's all about expanding with our customers, so cross-selling our existing customers additional solutions, either data management or the business applications. And then really key to our growth strategy, and something that we're, you know, we're giving more focus on now than we have before, is around the smart partnerships. So we've got three types of smart partnerships. So we've got the consulting and large tech partners. We're working with a number of them at the moment. They might be doing a really big project. It could be a systems integrator with a sort of big £20 million project. And they would engage with us where there's some complex spatial data and there's a need for our software. Then there's the technology platform partners. So, for example, Esri. Now, we've really cemented that relationship through the deal that we did last year. We were a gold partner in France as a result of that. And then there's domain knowledge partners. So this is partners where they might be in a domain that's not the same as ours. So, for example, not in government utilities and transport. So they could be in something like insurance or retail. And we actually can embed our technology into their platforms. So, for example, we're doing this with Michael Baker in the US, where they've got a specific 911 emergency services solution, and our one integrate is embedded in that platform. And every time we make a sale, we just get a 25% royalty. So we're sticking with our key industries of government utilities and transport, potentially adding facilities management. And I'll talk a bit more about why we're doing that later on. And we're sticking with our key geographies. So I wanted to just spend a bit of time now looking at how are we doing what we said we were going to do in terms of strategy. What have we done in the last 6 months to prove that? So we have been investing in innovation. So we've been building differentiation and increasing our addressable market. So I just wanted to cover one integrate here and the fact that we're now seeing 3D data coming much more to the fore. And I made a decision about 18 months ago that we would invest in 3D because we could see it was coming. And, you know, that's really our sweet spot in terms of dealing with complicated data. But we're now seeing that there is a growing interest from national mapping agencies. So they want to combine their sort of 2D flat map that they've currently got with 3D data. And that's something that we're really good at doing that alignment and bringing those different data sets together. And it also is opening up the facilities management sector, which I think could be a fourth sector for OneSpatial to concentrate on. We also have a business app that we acquired with GeoMap Images for real world 4D, which gives you some visualization of 3D data. So we're looking at combining one integrate with this real world 4D app. And in the market, we're really seeing an increased preference for customers to push the validator out to the data supply chain. And that is exactly where One Data Gateway sits. So from a customer's perspective, instead of having all the cost at your headquarters at the center, managing and checking and validating the data, you push it out through the One Data Gateway and make your suppliers do it. And this is what we're using in the Michigan contract, where eventually there'll be 300 different contributors of data pushing data through our One Data Gateway portal and validating it. And you'll actually see in the case studies that I'm going to show in a little while, Data Gateway keeps coming up time and time again. So we're really excited about the fact that we did do Data Gateway and launched it in March. Then on the business application side, we're doing some promising applications around traffic management, ecology survey, and water leakage. Now, those three applications are database agnostic, so it doesn't matter where your data is sitting. And they're really exciting applications that are built on our core technology, One Integrate. So One Integrate is underneath the hood of these solutions and doing all the powerful manipulation of the data. And then the One Water solution is an Esri-based application that's being built in our French business. Now, the exciting thing about One Water is we are making it as a global application. And as Esri is so dominant in the market, you know, we could sell One Water to the French market, but there's no reason why we can't go to the other Esri distributors globally and get them to help us sell One Water too. So we've got some really exciting business applications that we're working on. And then, as I mentioned before, you know, the cloud platform is really key. So we're now onto the last part of this really, which is the full multi-tenancy and elastic scalability. And this should be ready during the next financial year. So other evidence of our winning strategy are the wins that we've had. So we won a really great contract with the Environment Agency. Now, we won this in the COVID period, and we were competing against some of the UK's largest engineering firms. So the Environment Agency needs to keep all its asset data accurate. It needs to know where its dams are or its rivers are. And then it needs to use that data to do things like flood protection and planning and maintenance of its assets. So this project, what we're doing with them, is helping them get that data in good order so they can make these business decisions. So we did the proof of concept with the client during COVID. You know, luckily, we were able to do this in the cloud with the customer because our technology is cloud enabled. And now we're moving on to the next stage of the solution delivery. So this isn't just one solution that we think we can do for the environment agency. This is actually a repeatable solution that we can use for government agencies. So this goes back to the strategy that I was talking about earlier in terms of one of the pillars of our growth strategy. And also we're working alongside a partner here called Black and Veatch. Again, these are one of the domain type of partners. So Black and Veatch, they look at a specific data type called COBE data. We don't have those expertise. So this is where it's really useful to bring in a partner so we can do a really good, successful proposal together. So the next case study that I would like to go through to show the evidence of our winning strategy is with regards to the US and our deal with Michigan and the US Geological Survey. So we did talk about the Michigan contract at our last results. It was a contract that we won just after the year end in June. And this is a multi-year contract for our LMDM solution over 5 years, and it's $2.6 million. And around 40% of this contract is around recurring term license revenue. And this is really scalable revenue because we are putting our rules engine through the data gateway out to a number of contributors. So as more and more contributors send data through our portal, we'll be able to potentially increase the licenses. We've started on the Michigan contract in June, and this is really progressing to plan. And we've now had encouraging interest from other US states. So we've just had a recent win in September with the US Geological Survey pilot. Now, this contract had been delayed by COVID-19. It was meant to be around May and June, but was finalized in September. And this is a really great win for us. It's a new federal customer with really great potential for future expansion. And again, as I mentioned before, you know, this is all about one integrate and one data gateway and using the supply chain to do the validation. And lastly, evidence of our winning strategy in Europe. So first I wanted to talk about the same ground lack, the new win, but also the strong platform that we now have in Europe following the deal that we did with Esri last year and the acquisition. Same ground lack was a new customer win for us following a competitive tender, again, against a number of the big companies. And it's all around management and development of the Seine River in Paris, making sure that they have good control of where their assets are and helping them make the decisions they need to from that location data. And we've got a four-year framework agreement with them for those solutions. So that could be a mixture of business applications and data management. There is a good expansion opportunity with this client. And we now have a solid platform for growth in Europe. We signed a four-year support and maintenance with one of our biggest clients, and the ELIX migration is underway, taking our clients from the old legacy GIS to the new world of LMDM solutions. And the relationship with Esri France is going really well, so we're doing lots of co-marketing and lots of collaboration on everything we're doing. So just to summarise, we've got a really good strengthened financial position, good positive cash inflows, and that gives us a great foundation for growth, and particularly given this recent COVID crisis. We've got good strategic customer wins and expansion deal, adding to our growing order book. And we've got continued investment in innovation to really capture that massive market that's now here in terms of location data. So whilst COVID may extend some of the contract negotiations, we're still delivering on existing customer projects and our pipeline of work is strong. So absolutely increasingly confident and excited about the future of OneSpatial. So thanks very much for listening. And I think we're now going to go over to some questions.
And we have a question from Gareth Evans at Progressive Equity Research.
Two questions from me. First of all, thank you for giving the case study on Michigan. And it's interesting to hear about what you're doing and how that's working for them. But I'm just interested in terms of the background or sort of effectively what's different or what's unusual about the state of Michigan and why in particular they were sort of one of the leaders or the early adopters of the platform and the technology, and whether you think there are attributes about Michigan that you might see in other states or other locations around the world that sort of would follow suit later. And then secondly, in terms of the One Data Gateway, and you talked about how some customers, you know, Michigan included, but others by the sound of it as well, are sort of pushing outwards and downwards the validation of these data sets into their suppliers or their partners and ecosystems. I think you mentioned that one of them had 300 suppliers contributing data in. Does that add materially to your cost or impact on your margin as maybe you're responsible for sort of managing all of those contributors of data? Do you need to train them? Do you need to ensure consistency and spend time and effort trying to make sure that it's comparable and you've got a sort of a clean data set? Or is that really on the part of your customers to make sure that that happens smoothly and cleanly?
On the last part, yeah, that's for our customers. So we sell them the term license of the software, which as they need more, if more contributors are going to be pushing data through our data gateway portal, they'll need more session queues, so they will increase more license. But you know, in terms of the customers, if they need training, obviously we would provide services if Michigan wasn't able to do it themselves. But it should be a fairly self-service portal for the clients. So the rules will be set up by Michigan. We'll help them write the rules. But once the rules are done, there might be some tweaking for the rules. But you know, they'll be set up in the cloud portal and the customer just has to drag and drop. So this is on our own cloud platform at the moment. So this is in a private cloud. Michigan are paying for all the private cloud costs. So if that expands, we haven't got an additional cost for that. We're just deploying our technology and we're getting all the license revenue and the service revenues from that contract. And then just in terms of the Michigan contract, so the Michigan, I would say, is quite a forward-looking state. And, you know, there's so many issues with data across the US in terms of lots of different silos. But Michigan, being forward-thinking, they wanted to have one single source of location data truth within the state that they could then sell that, you know, provide that data to all the different departments in Michigan. They could give it to the forestry, to the schools, to the roads. And, you know, some states are doing some similar things, but probably not as not on such a grand scale of getting this really, you know, really, you know, one source of the truth. You know, I think there are more pockets of some databases being synchronized, but not all. But a lot of this traditionally has all been done, the validation, bringing in the data from all the different computers. There's a lot of sort of manual work and scripting and getting the data into formats and pushing it into the database, which is done by lots of manual people manually at the center. So Michigan are really at the forefront with this idea of showing how you can push it out to the one data gateway. But the thing that really sold it to them was that we were working with Esri Inc. in the state of Michigan and doing a bit of work with them around their data. And we showed them one integrate, we showed them the power of it, and then we showed them what we were doing in data gateway. It was in the innovation labs at the time of showing it to Michigan. And they just thought, yeah, this is absolutely what we need. So we did some sort of, you know, we talked about the land and expand approach, did some initial like work with them. And yeah, they liked it. So the next step is the implementation. It's going really well. And then, you know, we're already talking and then we're already showing some of this to the other states. There's absolutely no reason why this isn't a repeatable solution to the other states.
And we'll now go to Dan Gardner at Edison.
Hi, guys. Great to hear the progress in the business over the last 6 months, particularly in the difficult period. I had a couple of questions, if that's okay. One to Claire and one to Andy. So Claire, you highlighted what seemed to be quite a substantial improvement in the order book over the last 6 months, an improvement in the pipeline and in visibility overall. Is there any greater granularity you could provide on the size of that uptick, or is the mix changing at all? So what's driving? Is it particular geographies, particular sectors, or types of deals? And then to Andy, you highlighted the improvement in free cash flow and the progress you made there in the first half. Could you talk about if there's an opportunity to improve cash flow further going forward, and what opportunities do you see to squeeze working capital further or drive down costs or investment, or is it predominantly going to be top line driven as we look out? Okay, thank you.
In terms of the order book, so that has increased a lot since January. In terms of specific geographies, obviously that's increased a lot in the US because of the Michigan deal. We landed, you know, the $2.6 million But we know we've only just really started on that contract. We've only recognised a very small amount of that in this half year. The implementation is going to be sort of 12 to 18 months. So that's sort of a demonstration of why that order book's increasing. But it's not just US. We've had some really good orders that have come in the UK as well. Obviously, slightly less so in France, but they already had a quite good order book at the start of the year. And then in terms of the pipeline has really grown. Again, it's a mixture, across all territories. Again, particularly I would say the US and the UK has got some quite big deals in there, particularly around sort of the consulting and large tech partners that I spoke about earlier. Again, it's not all, it's pipeline, so we haven't won it yet, but we're really encouraged. I think it's the way the market is going at the moment. You know, GIS is much more, what, geospatial information or location data is just coming much more to the mainstream. The GIS department down the sort of corridor is no longer the thing, and that's what it was 5 to 10 years ago. Much more now, all the data, all the implementations that we're seeing will have generally a location data element. A lot of the big systems integrator companies, a lot of the companies that go for these larger tenders just don't have that expertise. So we're being called in. So, you know, that's really where we are. And it's sort of the exciting opportunities that are out there at the moment that we're getting involved in. And if you look on any of the geospatial website, the Geospatial Commission, Tech UK, Innovate UK, all of the utility companies, they're putting huge budgets out that are all around location data and providing innovation in these key sectors. So we'll be having a close look at all of these going forward, because there's some really great opportunities out there.
Thanks, Claire, and thanks, Dan. Yeah, in terms of cash flow, I think we are definitely focused on trying to improve on the first half. At the moment, I'd be a little bit cautious just because we don't quite know what's going to happen in the second half, but we're confident that we're not going to go backwards. In terms of where that growth will come from, there's lots of little bits and pieces that we can do to improve things, which will improve the cash, looking at our sort of billing cycles and contracts, even existing contracts. Maybe there's lots of incremental things there, but I guess the bulk of it is probably going to be top line driven. That really is the focus. Getting the sales up will improve our cash flow.
And we've got a question from Andy Bryant at Liberum.
Hi, Claire. Hi, Andy. Thank you for taking the questions. Two questions, if I may, please. One is just, I think, similar to Gareth's, just on one water this time rather than Michigan. So tell us a bit more about as and when you launch that product fully, the sort of the sales cycle. What are the utility companies doing today in that area? Are they trying to cobble something together? What's the ROI? Are you confident in terms of how you would position and sell one water? And then secondly, you mentioned a number of larger sort of projects which you're hopefully bidding on with some of the bigger consultants. If you were to be successful with those, do you actually have the team of consultants today to deliver those?
Okay, so taking one water first. So as we mentioned, the one water business application is sitting on top, is the business app which sits on top of the Esri platform. So currently, Esri, their GIS has something called the utility network model, and that gives a level of functionality to a utility company. But Esri is, you know, quite broad. It gives a utility network model, which is the same to all utility companies. And our experience, we've got a lot of experience with working with utility companies, and particularly France. We know there are specific things that they want in addition to what the Esri system gives to run their business. So these are the things that we're putting into the business app. So all our expertise and domain expertise that we learned from the LX system, we're putting into this app. So we're not going to replace the underpinning Esri technology, because you've got the best of breed GIS underneath, but we're building that little layer on top, which will give the customers exactly what you need. And you can deliver it as a COTS, you know, custom off the shelf products, and customers do prefer that. And we're also looking, so one of some of the innovations and things that we've been doing in the UK is looking at there's a real problem with leakage in terms of water and floodings, and we are looking at a potential leakage app in the UK, which is actually database agnostic, but we're looking to like put that into the One Water app. So we're giving the clients what they had sort of already in terms of what they needed to run their business and get full use from the business app, but also adding some extra innovation that we've found out from the market more generally. So we'll be putting that into One Water. And we're not developing One Water just in French. We're making it a global app. So this will be able to be sold to other countries. I mean, Esri is global. You know, it's dominant, you know, over 40% global market share. So a potential route, and one that we're talking with sort of Esri Inc. about, is that once this is ready, we can go and approach some of the other Esri distributors in the other countries and look at working with them and going to market. They can sell the Esri utility network model and we can sell the One Water. So that's pretty exciting for us. And then in terms of your other question around the consulting and large tech partnerships, and a sort of straightforward answer to that is if we did win some of them, we may have to take on some more people. But generally in some of these big contracts, you do have we'll get a feel for whether we're likely to win it or not. And then you get quite a bit of time between winning the contract, signing the contract, you know, mobilising, getting some of the contracts going. So we will have a bit of time where we would be able to look at taking on some more people if we needed to. But we are having a look at, and I am with Andy, having a look at our sort of business model in terms of the people that we have and the skills that we have, particularly now with COVID, and you don't necessarily have to have everyone in Cambridge. So there could be opportunities to skill up more of a base of skills in Tunisia, which we're currently looking at. So there could be just because of the sort of more remote working and potentially some more flexibility about taking those consultants on. But we also have, you know, a bank of contractors that we can use if need be.
And that's the end of the questions. Claire, do you have any closing remarks?
I'd just like to just reiterate my last slide, really, in terms of, you know, I think we're in a really good position. You know, the market is really there for us. Unfortunately, we have COVID, but I think we'll get through that. We've got, you know, £6 million in the bank. We're not burning cash. So, you know, just really, you know, increasingly confident and just excited about the future. So, you know, we've got lots of really great things happening. We've got a really good team. You know, Andy joining us is a real asset. So, you know, I think, you know, we've got a really good future, and I think we're all really excited about it.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.